You know, here's the truth. Dietary fat does not equal body fat. So a lot of people think that, okay, well, fat is fat, right? No.
You've just tuned into Rebel Wellness Podcast, your resource for realigning and revitalizing your health and well-being. I'm your host, Kaylee, also known as Coach Kales. I'm a holistic health educator, certified nutritionist, and fitness professional of nearly a decade. I'm stoked to have you with us. You just joined a community of amazing souls who are ready to break free from the confines of the often outdated and confusing health advice all around us. Living in a world overwhelmed by quick fix diets and unrealistic beauty and body standards, us rebels stand for change. If you're like me, you're exhausted with the confusion and polarization plaguing the social media health scene. My mission is to empower you to step beyond today's diet culture. Adopt a holistic health approach paired with the foundations of science for lasting, well-rounded wellness. Through teaching you how to tune in and embrace your mind, body, and soul, we'll reject one-size-fits-all solutions, realigning you on a better path that honors your unique needs and values. With new episodes weekly, this podcast is your sanctuary for deep wellness exploration, featuring expert advice, real-life stories, and a true commitment to your growth. Your journey to better health and simplicity in life begins now. Let's jump right in. Welcome back, Rebels. This is our Macro Myth Series finale. You just tuned in to our fat episode. So we're going to be talking about dietary fats and some of the top myths that I wanted to debunk for you guys today, because I think it's really important that these topics get drilled in, because we still hear them, you know, whether it's word of mouth or on social media. And I find it really important for us to kind of cut through the BS. You know, if you are somebody who is new to this podcast, that is exactly what Rebel Wellness is all about, hence kind of the name Rebel Wellness. And I'm sure you listened to the intro where I kind of talk about that. But if you are somebody who is has been listening to this podcast for a while now, you know that that is what we like to do here, because there's enough confusing stuff going on in our lives everywhere, every day, and we really should not be so confused about food, okay? I want to talk about, you know, three of the biggest fat myths that I still see women believing, and it's hurting their hormones, metabolism, energy, and even brain health. And so we're going to dive into a little bit of that today. And I also am going to add in some actionable tips that are going to be at the end of this episode, so that we can kind of bust through those fat fears and integrate healthy fats into your life, because they're going to probably be a game changer for even like your skin and your hair and eyes, your nails. So many good things come from proper dietary intake of healthy fats. So we will dive into all of that. But before we do, I just want to invite you guys to come join our community at Kaylee Loren on Instagram, as well as at Rebel Wellness Podcast. You can check us out and go to the show notes, and there will be the direct links there. It's a little bit faster to do it that way. And we also have some exciting things coming down the pipeline as far as something I've been cooking on for you guys while I'm in grad school currently. So if you want to be some of the first people to hear about it, join our newsletter at kayleeloren.com. Again, you can kind of check out all those links there. And they're also in my link in bio on Instagram as well. And if you ever have any topics that you guys would like me to research and cover or share my thoughts on and my experience, I've been coaching women in the health industry now for over a decade. And so, you know, I always love opportunities to help you. If you're listening, you're important to me. Like that's as much as I could like just say, because it's so important to me that I, you know, cater to you because you bother to tune in. And so I'm helping you. This is free coaching, babe. Like this is as good as it's going to get as far as free stuff goes. So shoot me a DM on Instagram and I'd love to hear some topic ideas that you would love me to cover. And a couple of you guys have reached out to me in the last couple weeks telling me like you love the protein episode. One of you guys said that you even calculated your macros to find out how much protein you needed from our protein episode. So if you haven't listened to that episode, I believe that is episode 110, go back and listen to that one. And I was so grateful that you told me about that, because I'm like, you know what? If that one episode was super important for at least one person to give them a little peace of mind of how much protein they need to eat, then that's all that matters to me. So I love when you guys do give me some feedback like that. All right, let's dive into the biggest fat myths and tips that I have for dietary fats. Okay, so unlike the previous episode, I'm not going to give a lot of sciencey background on dietary fats for this episode. So if you would love the down and dirty on all things to do dietary fats as a macronutrient, go to episode 22. That series, I did a really good deep dive on protein, carbs, and fats. So go check that one out. It'll be linked in the show notes too, but episode 22 is where you're going to learn all of that stuff. I went over it a little bit more in the carbs because honestly, I'd say out of all three macronutrients, carbs are the ones that are like the most misinformed for a lot of us. And so I felt the need to put that back in there just in case that was somebody's first episode listening about carbs as a, you know, from a scientific standpoint as well as an application standpoint. But for as far as fats go, they have a lot more complexities than carbs. Like they have a variety of different types of chains of fatty acids and all these different things that I don't want to discuss in here. So episode 22 is going to be your best resource for that. But first myth that I want to talk about today is that fat makes you fat. So, you know, similarly to how I had said, you know, carbs make you fat, this is the other one that I hear a lot of people also saying, and I'm like, oh my God, so carbs and fat make you fat? Like, why are we not only eating protein forever? And it's hilarious because a lot of people will even go as far as saying like, and protein makes you fat when you eat too much of it. And I'm like, no, that is the hardest macronutrient to make fat out of. You have to be in a very specific dire situation for that to happen, which is why protein is one of the best body composition macronutrients as far as keeping a leaner physique or supporting a leaner physique and keeping excess fat off you. However, you don't want to live only on protein. We need all three macronutrients in every meal, every day to keep a really happy, healthy body, especially as females. So kind of similar to this whole series is really oriented towards menstruating females. It's okay if you're in perimenopause and you're not menstruating as consistently. You know, I'm going to be doing some more episodes talking about that here soon. I've been working on the research and might even have a good guest for you guys coming on in the summertime. So I want to make sure that you know that these are a little bit more oriented to menstruating females. Postmenopausal women, it is a little bit more complex, but I would say that this episode on fat versus the episode on carbs can absolutely apply to you still, because a lot of women actually in postmenopause can benefit from brain health, skin health, heart health, a whole bunch of stuff like that from following like a ketogenic diet. All of this information, you know, as we talk about all the time, is not medical advice. It is something that we are just discussing as a conversation and for inspiration or ideas, but always discuss things with your practitioner, of course. However, we have a lot of research now backing that menopausal women can benefit from a ketogenic diet, which is like a high fat diet, moderate protein, and then low to no carb. That would be what would count as a ketogenic diet, because then you're switching most of your energy system to ketogenesis, which is fats. Okay. But again, I just want to make sure that you guys know, for if you are the person listening and you're trying to decide if like this advice applies to you, because I think a lot of people I've been observing don't really they don't say who is this for as specifically. And we all have different bodies. We all have different lifestyles. We all have different stressors. We're in different chapters. And I think it's really important that you understand that nutrition is similar. You know, you can do well to live a balanced, you know, well-rounded meal diet throughout your entire life. However, there are times and places for adjusting those things. So just wanted to kind of put a little note in there on that, because that's really important. I think you understand that different chapters are going to call for different things. So if you're somebody who's like in their 30s or 40s and you still sometimes refer back to some diet you followed in your 20s because it worked, quote unquote, Don't. I would say that that is a really, or even in your teens, I've fallen for that many times in my own life. And I forget that, like, well, my body is nothing like it used to be. It's got so many different chapters that it's lived, a lot of different stressors, or, you know, even moments of like traumas, like big breakups or anything that can actually really alter your gut and therefore alter your entire chemistry in your internal environment in general. And so we can never really go backwards, but we can always go forwards and we can always do better, right? So that's one of the ways I hope that you can kind of learn to look at every next chapter of your nutrition life, or your life in general with nutrition in it, because, well, you can't live life without eating. So, okay. So coming back around, myth one, fat makes you fat. So this is a myth because of the low fat craze that swept the 90s, you know, fear of calories, scale obsession, cocaine models, you know, unfortunately, we were really just attacked with a very unhealthy lifestyle and body image. And, you know, many of us are recovering from that. I'm lucky to be somebody who is still quite young during that time. So I didn't quite get as attacked by those narratives. However, I very much still see them and have to work through them with clients. And, you know, I did still experience them because it carried into the early 2000s. And so dietary fat, you know, here's the truth. Dietary fat does not equal body fat. So a lot of people think that, okay, well, fat is fat, right? No, technically not. Fat is calorically dense, yes. So, you know, it has a lot more calories and therefore in higher volumes if consumed disproportionately to how much energy you're putting out. So how active you are in your day, if you're using that energy, for example, it is not necessarily going to store as fat. And it is not necessarily the same thing as body fat. Body fat is adipose tissue. It's a different thing. But structurally, you know, like lipids, they are very similar. But it does not immediately become fat on your body. So if you've ever been somebody who thought like, oh, if I'm eating animal fat, it's going to store in my body as fat. No, not necessarily. Okay. And it's also hormonally essential. That's a very important thing, which is why you should not follow a low-fat diet probably ever. You know, I would say if you had to adjust between carbs and fats, like I've said before, unless you haven't heard any of my past chats, fat and carbs are your energy nutrients that you consume, and you can inverse them. So you can increase your dietary fat and decrease your carbs, or you can increase your carbs and decrease your fat to kind of have this energy balance of the total daily calories that you need every day, and protein should always stay consistent. However, you cannot really exist well long-term on low fat. And that's where, like, it kind of hurts my heart in a way, how many of our mothers and grandmothers were riddled with that narrative that fat makes you fat, that fat is bad for you, that fat causes high cholesterol, all the different things, you name them. And that is why, you know, it correlates a lot to why we're seeing a lot of early onset dementia and Alzheimer's for women who followed these rules. Even personally for me, somebody in my extended family died very young from early onset dementia. And as a kid, looking back from the times that I was around her and stuff, and, you know, just recalling from family things, she was always dieting and she always avoided fat. She always followed the low fat thing. And you're depriving your brain of really important, healthy nutrients that it needs and the ability to produce like healthy cholesterol. So cholesterol, you know, maybe I should do a whole episode on cholesterol because actually I think I have to, because it is, the science is changing quite a bit. But it is really important to know that cholesterol is exceptionally important when it comes to supporting, you know, not even just life in general, but in cell membranes, etc. Your hormones, you cannot create your sex hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, vitamin D, etc., all those different things. Yes, vitamin D is a steroid hormone. It is not a vitamin. You cannot make those without cholesterol. It's essential. And you cannot make bile acids for fat digestion without cholesterol. So if you eat an extremely low cholesterol diet, or you take too much statins and you don't actually need it, you're going to suffer the consequences over time if your cholesterol numbers start to be very low. So you may have an outdated doctor or GP if they see your numbers being under the triple digits in any of the cholesterol categories and being like, you have fantastic cholesterol. It's really low. That's great. And it's like, that may not be the best thing. You know, we actually see this a lot sometimes in certain like vegans when they don't consume animal proteins. And so therefore they're not consuming like a good amount of healthy fats, including saturated fats. Yes, saturated fats are healthy. You don't need to overeat them. And I'll talk more about that in a second. But there are something that is very important that the body, you know, naturally needs those fats to produce more than just, you know, fat or energy. So when it comes to the modern science behind cholesterol, we're starting to understand that elevated cholesterol, first off, we don't exactly have the best ranges as guides. They're still trying to understand if genetically different ethnic backgrounds need different ranges. It's very similar to like how I've discussed body fat percentages. Different ethnicities carry different body fat percentages, and one body fat percentage on one ethnicity may not be as unhealthy as it is on another ethnicity. And, you know, that's going to be a very complex thing that I hope to see more diversity in the medical field on. But I think we also need to start shifting that way for cholesterol as well, because, you know, even for me being half Filipino, everybody in my Filipino family struggles with quote unquote high cholesterol. And it's not necessarily that all of them are unhealthy. There are definitely ones that, you know, have an unhealthy lifestyle and they therefore carry higher cholesterol. However, we don't look at cholesterol as being the problem. When you're kind of thinking from a functional medicine perspective, elevated cholesterol can be like a signpost. It's not an automatic problem. It kind of invites like deeper questions like, is there inflammation, insulin resistance, thyroid issues? Like, we don't just look at LDL and see that it's elevated and be freaking out. We look at the big picture. What are the LDL particle sizes like? And how many of them are there? You know, LDL and HDL. LDL is the quote unquote bad cholesterol, but it's not necessarily always bad. And so it's like, I definitely need to do an episode on that so it can kind of help you guys break down and better understand cholesterol. I'm still learning a ton about it. Actually, in my program, we had an entire section on it, and it honestly was very overwhelming because there's a lot to it, and it just really points towards the fact that we don't really know, and a lot of the standard phrases and things that people say and a lot of the ranges that our GPs go by, frankly, right now are extremely outdated, and pushing statins on people is not necessarily the answer because it doesn't really fully solve the problem, and it definitely masks what is really going on because, you know, anything that goes on in your body can be a symptom of a bigger problem. You know, you'll hear it a lot of times as the root cause, and high cholesterol is actually not the cause of heart disease for everyone. It can be for some people, but it's not the way that it's been painted to be. And there's a lot more professionals in this space starting to discuss this as we've been getting more and more new science out on it. So I kind of wanted to take a moment to talk about that because that is a big myth. And cholesterol is created from fats, so lipids. So it is extremely important that you understand why we kind of need to change how we view cholesterol. And it is also very, you know, one myth that will kind of piggyback into that, that dietary cholesterol. So what you get from eggs and shrimp and, you know, all those dietary foods that are high in cholesterol, the body itself will regulate the cholesterol you eat. So if you eat more cholesterol, your liver will make less. And so there was a study in 2015 by the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee that removed the upper limit for dietary cholesterol because it didn't show a clear link to heart disease. So big bonus debunk in here is that dietary cholesterol, aka cholesterol you get from foods you eat, does not have a clear link to increasing your cholesterol and linking to heart disease. So that's super important to know. But you do want to manage your lifestyle and kind of keep an eye on what's going on so that you can tell, like, do I, again, those same questions I had asked, like, is inflammation going on? Is my thyroid having issues? Is something causing my cholesterol to increase because something is stressed out? Okay. So cholesterol travels in the body with fats. So fats are essential for cholesterol to do what it's supposed to do in your body, meaning also creating hormones. So this is why cholesterol and fats are kind of essential to have in this discussion, because they need each other, okay? So that's something that's really important to understand as far as the usual discussions around dietary fats. And so hopefully that makes a little bit of sense, or a little bit more sense. Okay, so let's go into myth number two. So saturated fats are bad for your health. So I touched on this and I said I was going to come back to it, right? So this myth kind of came around from old 1950s research. It's cherry-picked data and fear of cholesterol. Again, like I was just saying, it's kind of why cholesterol just has to be in this discussion. But the truth is, the relationship between saturated fat and heart disease is not clear-cut. Emerging research shows that saturated fat alone does not cause heart disease, so context matters. Oh gosh, guys, I could die on this hill, because that is something that I have personally researched a lot because of the discussions and arguments going on, especially in the science-based, science-bound nutrition community online. Food scientists, they will die on the hill that saturated fat is bad for your heart, because they follow the research only, okay? When you look at a lot of the research, and you know, I don't think that they are, I absolutely do not believe that they're dumb, okay? I'm not saying that they don't understand this or that, but I do think that for some reason they are just too married to research papers that are published and not thinking of the context of, you know, confounding variables or other components. Like the recent one that included like seed oils versus saturated fat, they baked it into muffins. So they combined the fats with carbs and then fed it to the people in the study and then gathered data from that. If you want to have a really clear-cut research on fats, comparing fats, so that in this case it was like canola oil versus I think coconut oil, which is a natural saturated fat, you need to have them consume it like without any other macronutrient as a variable. Because one of the biggest research studies that I had found back in the day was that Brazilian tribes that, you know, the ones that have hardly been exposed to modern day society, they live off coconuts and they eat a ton of coconut oil. And they do not have any issues with heart disease. So, and they eat a lot of animal fats when they hunt, and, you know, they drink coconut water, all these different things. They're consuming a really high diet in saturated fat, and there was no correlation to high cases in their tribes of heart disease at all. So again, context matters. So if you are somebody who consumes a lot of saturated fat from like factory farm beef, or pork or something like that, and you're combining it with highly processed carbohydrates, that's different. That absolutely can cause heart disease over time, especially if you're not an active person and utilizing those nutrients for energy. So therefore, if you're somebody who follows like a ketogenic diet and you eat more like keto green, where you involve fiber and all that good stuff, you are actually probably improving your risk for cardiovascular disease or any of that, improving it, like removing or reducing your risk, because you're removing this little perfect combination of processed carbs and saturated fat that is artery clogging and causes issues like that, or sugars, you know, carbs, sugars paired with saturated fats. That is one of those easiest ways to put your body in a very unhealthy situation. Because when you really think about it, guys, if you go back and think about how like those tribes are eating, our bodies really never had all this convenience food available and all this highly processed, get it quick, get it straight into your system type of sugars and foods. You know, you go to a fast food place, you eat a saturated fat and carb laden burger, and you got it immediately and you start eating it. You didn't cook it, prepare it, take time to build up the digestive enzymes. There's a whole bunch of different things that come into it that they make it addicting, so that you can overeat it too, because you're usually throwing in then, you know, saturated fat soaked, or not even just saturated fat. They used to be saturated fat. I mean, some places are going back to that for fries and, you know, not necessarily better in that sense. But you're getting all of these really calorie dense and really low quality fats combined with these carbs that are, again, usually starchy carbs like potatoes as fries, buns on your burgers, all those kind of things. And that's the combination that is correlated to heart disease. However, you cannot say that somebody is eating just coconut oil and, you know, leafy greens or broccoli and good quality steak and all this stuff. And we have never seen somebody eat like that and actually have higher risk for heart disease. So when we get black and white about foods saying that all saturated fat is bad, not true. And so that's where the context, again, like I said, context matters. So, and the quality matters, you know, factory farm bacon is not the same thing as grass-fed butter or grass-fed ghee, which is, you know, clarified butter, or coconut oil. So that matters as well. So most of the research too that has been done on red meats that has gotten the bad rap, that is still like a broken record that needs to die. You know, honestly, I think that I see it from the perspective as well, that it is one of those areas that's hard to discuss with the general population and not have them take it out of context or not think about the nuance. But for you guys, that's why I really want to drive home the nuance, because if you can understand that, it can help you really navigate foods in your world so much better for the long term. Because I do think that you have the capacity to understand the difference between like one of those bacon, cheap bacon companies. That fat is going to be not the same quality and have a lot of other things pumped into it versus a nice grass-fed, pasture-raised, quality milk product or beef, whatever. Or even just a freaking coconut. You know, coconut oil is very, very healthy. But again, you need to think about it as not being combined with worldly, highly processed carbs and things like that, and sugars, etc. Okay, so some people may need to moderate their saturated fats if they have certain genetic profiles, and that's something that is important to know. But you'll kind of usually see that show up in your blood work, so it is always important to get your annual blood work, and I always recommend you ask your doctor for, you know, a full blood panel, comprehensive metabolic panel is what it would be called, and so that you can get a deeper insight into, like, more of your picture. Luckily, nowadays, you can order your own blood work, and it is completely allowed and fine, and you have the capacity to, you know, read into it yourself. I mean, honestly, AI can actually break it down for you as well. So I highly recommend, if you have the budget for it, I would just order a good amount of recommended labs on your own. And then you can always bring that to your doctor as well if you have a doctor appointment. But, you know, for a lot of us here in the US, and I know it's even worse in Canada, I don't know how it is in other surrounding countries, but those are the top two because that's where I am located, that I know of. It is like, it takes months to get in to see your doctor, and half the time they only give you like 15 minutes and they seem rushed, right? And so if you can learn how to take care of yourself and learn your own basic data, you don't always need a doctor all the time to handhold you. And half the time they're usually going to say that you're obese because of your BMI and want you to get on some sort of med or something like that. Not all the time, but honestly, a lot of my female clients under the age of 45, like every time they go to their doctor, they're like, my doctor called me obese and they said that I should consider starting statins or I should take Pepcid. Or on the alternate side, you'll have a bunch of markers come back really high and they'll say like, oh, we won't worry about it, just work on your lifestyle. These are all true stories of things recently in the last 2 years that I've had to help my community navigate. So I just wanted to kind of bring that up because I think that there is a lot to be said about how behind we are with certain nutrition advice, like myth number two, that saturated fat is bad for your heart. It is not always bad for your heart, and you can eat up to 20 to 30 grams of it a day. More if you, again, are somebody who is eating an intentional ketogenic or animal-based diet, for those of you who follow like carnivore or something like that. Not saying that I recommend that, but that is a different category. That's where the nuance comes in. I've seen some people's numbers go insanely better when they did a therapeutic nutritional intervention on keto. It blew my mind. I remember the first time that one of my clients and I decided, that keto was a really good intervention while she prepared for her breast cancer surgery, and like all of her markers got so healthy. Probably a lot to do with, you know, reduction of a lot of inflammation, excess fat, all that kind of stuff. So there's a time and place for interventions, especially something like, since we're discussing fats, ketogenic diets can be useful, but again, you need to be intentional. I highly recommend more of a keto green style that involves more vegetables so you can get that fiber. So anyways, tangent there. Myth number three, the final one, is that you should avoid fats if you want to lose weight. So it's kind of like that same exact one that we heard for carbs, right? Just cut carbs and you'll lose weight. So this myth kind of sticks around a lot because, again, of the fear of calories, the diet culture, cutting carbs and fats equals fast weight loss, which essentially is just people cutting calories. Like I have kind of pointed out in the beginning of this, fats hold more calories. They're 9 calories per gram compared to carbs and protein, which are 4 calories per gram. So when people cut back fats, they are creating a deficit. And you only need to create like a 100 to 250 calorie a day deficit to start having compounding weight loss effect over time. That's actually a healthier deficit. A lot of people cut like 500 to 1,000 calories to try to really push along fat loss, and that's usually the people you'll see hit a plateau, and that's why we really don't want to do that. And frankly, it's unnecessary, but we're in that kind of quick fix diet culture that wants to see fat loss fast, you know, and so it is really easy to be kind of seduced by that concept. But the truth is, fat is, again, essential for satiety and metabolic health. So you really need to consume it for a lot more than just eating something and having something in your stomach. Low-fat diets can lead to a lot of cravings. I've seen that a ton with clients. Blood sugar crashes, and again, the worst offender is hormonal imbalances, specifically for women and menstruating women especially. And so we really don't want to be cutting out fats because they are one of our healthiest ways to keep, you know, blood sugar balanced because it digests slower, hence the higher calories per gram. You really need your hormones to be happy, especially when you're menstruating. And when you push yourself into these low-fat diets, usually you'll start to see your skin look really dry, kind of get a little crepey, your hair might be kind of not its best, not shiny. You know, that's why we feed, like I feed my husky some of like the biologically appropriate foods. And so I feed him sardines and salmon oil to keep his fur like really shiny and healthy. And guess what? It works. Same thing goes for humans. So something weird too, I've actually been increasing my sardine intake because I've discovered a company on Thrive Market that does them, like they've removed the skin and most of like the significant bones. And honestly, it's not that fishy. They're suspended in olive oil, like I think either Spanish or Greek olive oil. I don't know. And I just put it on like a piece of my like homemade fermented sourdough with like some microgreens or some arugula. And a lot of people might be going like, that sounds disgusting, but it actually is really good. And I'll like drizzle some more good quality olive oil on it and some sea salt. And it really, you know, it's a great hormonal snack, but it's also one of the easiest ways that I'm trying to incorporate more dietary calcium and omegas and vitamin D, even a lot of good stuff. I believe also zinc naturally, and yeah, lots of nutrients. So random tangent about sardines, but they are a very healthy fat source. So it's not entirely random, but I will say that, you know, cutting fat can really backfire a lot as well, because it can make you binge more on craving foods because your body is really asking for those nutrients. And it might also be asking you to manage that blood sugar balance better, because when you cut back your fat, you usually are increasing or having a higher ratio of carbohydrates in your diet versus protein and fat. And so usually you'll see yourself then get blood sugar roller coasters, and you put yourself at higher risk of like rebound weight gain. So typically I wouldn't go the route of cutting fat low when you are trying to work on your body composition. I would keep it in that 20 to 30% of your daily calories zone as far as macros go. And I would never go lower than that. That'd be a little too low for your hormone health and your just health in general. So fat supports long-term metabolic health and your sustainable fat loss, so do not cut it out. You can reduce it, though, if you find that you are somebody who is over-consuming it in your day-to-day diet. So if you're somebody who's trying to clean up your diet and stop doing as much fast food or pizzas or donuts or goodies, you know, like we had talked about in the carb episode, a lot of those are a combination of high fat, high carb. So that's why they're super yummy and palatable. However, they are super calorically dense because of the combination of both carbs and fats, usually almost in an equal proportion. And so if you're somebody who wants to cut back your fats, I would look into cutting back those highly processed fats and, you know, seed oils and things like that. We will be doing a Hot Take Summer episode on seed oils to kind of circle back on that. I don't think I've done a seed oils, but I've combined it into something else, I believe. So I'm going to kind of do one that's updated on the modern science this summer. So stay tuned for that episode. But that kind of wraps up the myths that I wanted to talk about. And I hope that that made sense for you guys, why they are not true. But let's jump into a couple of actionable tips for you that I would love for you to kind of take away from today's episode. So one of my tips would be, you know, start simple. So think about adding 1 to 2 healthy fats to each of your meal. So that can be avocado. Those are monounsaturated fatty acids. Those are very healthy for our body. They are important for improving your heart health. So you definitely want to incorporate more of those where you can. And, you know, avocados are just delicious in general. They are high histamine food. So if you're somebody who struggles with histamine intolerance or you get reactions, then probably just avoid avocados. it would kind of suck because they are such a good healthy fat that's natural as far as plant fats go. But if you're getting reactions, then obviously you're going to have to avoid it. But the easiest next thing you could do is extra virgin olive oil. There's also healthy nuts and seeds. You know, there's some healthy benefits for women having sunflower seeds, raw sunflower seeds, ideally, some people call them pepitas, that you can have in the first half of your cycle. Then the latter half of your cycle, you can have more flax seeds. And that's kind of a way to sort of quote unquote seed cycle, not as strictly as a lot of people suggest it. I would say that I don't know if I really agree with seed cycling specifically, because there kind of can be like pros and cons to it, especially if you're somebody who doesn't eat the seeds fast enough and you're eating rancid seeds. Flax seeds, ground flax seed actually goes rancid quite fast. So if you have ground flax seeds in your pantry, you're going to want to put those in your fridge because those go rancid quickly. There's a lot of things to do with a lot of seed oils and plant-based oils. Aside from the highly processed like canola oil and grapeseed oil, etc., those don't go rancid quite as fast, which is why they're in everything. That is exactly why the processed food world loves canola oil. And that's why they're just having this huge fight against everybody who is poo-pooing it, because they're like, oh, but it's so cheap to make and it can keep everything so, you know, and it's such a neutral oil, it doesn't taste anything and things won't spoil. So I get why Big Food Corp is like really trying to, you know, is literally paying dietitians and people to push it as being fine. But unfortunately, it is not fine. A lot of us are actually seeing, you know, the results in our own bodies. And so I always say, trust your body, trust how it makes you feel. You know, you can incorporate also grass-fed butter. I personally use ghee. So I have clarified butter that removes the milk solids and, you know, fatty fish, cold water fish, like I had said, sardines, but there's more than just sardines. I'm going to become weird and I'm going to be that person that's like, sardines. I never really thought I would ever be that person. My husband saw me eating that the other day and he's like, that's such a Monterey Bay snack to have. And I was like, yeah, well, I'm doing it for the health benefits, okay? I'm trying to focus on healing foods right now. So my next tip would be prioritize quality, of course. So if you can budget towards good quality fats from whole food sources like olives over processed oils, grass-fed butter over margarine, please. Please never eat margarine. Please never eat plant-based butter in general. If you look at the ingredients on that, it is just simply not healthier for you. I would rather you just use olive oil if you're going to do that. Not to sound judgy on it, it's just they're just seriously not healthier for you. And it's just a little bit disappointing that there's companies like that have even used the Kardashians to push their plant-based butter substitutes, and they're just simply not healthier for you. They are so unnatural for the body. So watch out for those inflammatory oils. So like I had said, seed oils and things like that, that are highly processed and usually put into foods because they taste neutral and they don't spoil as fast. So look out for that. And I would just say prioritize natural. So extra virgin, I think you actually can't even say extra virgin coconut oil anymore because it kind of has to be pressed. So it's virgin coconut oil, extra virgin olive oil, olives, avocados, all of those healthy natural sources are going to be your best ones to incorporate. So think about quality more than quantity, okay? And then next tip would be tune into your satiety cues. So are you satisfied after your meals? Because fat will help you feel full and fueled. Some people might, if it was too much fat, like if it was like a fatty fried meal, you might feel really icky, gross, and not so good. So tuning into how your body feels as feedback to the food you ate is so important for you gaining a lot more confidence in understanding what your individual body needs, okay? So think about it when you're eating your fats. Like, did you eat like something with avocado and eggs? Because eggs are actually a very healthy source of good fats. And they include like choline, which is a very important brain health nutrient. And so if you're eating something like that for breakfast, do you feel like nice and satiated and balanced and ready to go for the day? That would be a good way for you to tell, like, if you had enough fats in your meal. A lot of times we'll just like grab a piece of toast or something weird like that, and maybe a snack. Some people only grab protein bars, you know, it kind of depends on like how well you're prepared and stuff. And you'll usually feel like, oh man, I'm hungry. It's only 10 a.m. and I ate at like 8, you know, or something like that. That's just a common scenario that a lot of my clients in the past have done. And so then that's a good sign that like, yeah, you did not have enough healthy fats mixed into that meal. And it is not what I like to call a rounded meal or a balanced meal, as other people can call it. And that means that you didn't have a good amount of healthy fats, good quality protein, and, you know, complex carbohydrates. They can be simple carbohydrates too, but, you know, usually it's better to have complex carbohydrates with your breakfast. And so if you're snacking constantly or feeling energy dips through the day, it might be time to add some more fats to that meal. So make that meal more substantial and calorically dense. And the easiest way to do that is with a healthy fat. Nut butters are also a good way. I meant to add that to the other one. Nut butters are an easy way to add healthy fats, but not Skippy. I'm not talking Skippy. That's not, that is not a healthy fat. I'm talking like if you can, ideally organic, but if you can go natural, where when you read that label, all it says is peanuts and maybe sea salt, that's what you want. You want to have less than 3 ingredients in your nut butter. If I had to be a really like hardcore nutritionist, I'd say like it needs to only have 2 ingredients, because that's all you need for nut butter. Technically all you need is 1, you just need the nut. But a lot of us like salt, and you should not be afraid of salt. And so sea salt is usually the second ingredient that you should see. So it should be the nut plus the salt, okay? That is the best quality nut butter you can have. If it has more than that, then it's probably not the best. And I know it's annoying. You do have to mix it and all that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of hacks like on YouTube on how to make mixing your nut butter easier. And then when you store it in the fridge, it shouldn't separate as quickly and all that junk. It's funny I had to kind of incorporate that, because those are, again, all the usual gripes that I get from clients when I mention those things. Like Skippy peanut butter has like a different oil in it. I think it has like palm oil, or it used to. And then it also has like sugar and a whole bunch of other stuff that it's just like, that's not peanut butter. That's like a weird butter that has some peanut flavoring. Like, I don't know about that. But it is a great texture. And as a child, I did enjoy it. So I know the appeal, guys, but we're adults now. So let's eat healthy, natural nut butters. All right. And the last tip that I have for you guys before we close today out is that, again, experiment and personalize for yourself. So some people thrive on the higher fat diets, others feel better with moderate fat diets. So listen to your body, kind of feel it out. For me, I am a moderate fat person. I enjoyed when I did the keto experiment, but for me, I just really do not enjoy a high fat diet consistently. And for most of us menstruating females, like, you really probably won't either, because we have times in our cycle where we really need to inverse and increase our carbohydrates. So for me, like, I don't feel I don't reach for a lot of extra fats. Like only recently have I started to like add more butter and stuff to things as a kid. Not because of diet culture. I just literally never was that interested in fats. I was more of a carb girl. I get a lot more energy from carbs and all that kind of stuff. So I'm a moderate fat person. I am not a low fat. Notice, I am not a low fat person. I still consume healthy fats because I know how important they are for the rest of the systems in my body. So you can also consider like functional testing, like lipid panels, and see your genetics. If you feel like you are probably somebody who does not do well on higher fat diets, and you know, you can get some insights there and see if you are eating too high of fats, if your lipids and stuff kind of come back not in the best ranges. Okay. But if you are somebody who I want to add, if you do go and order your own blood work and you want to compare it to something, there are some doctors online. I believe actually Dr. Hyman on his Function, I think it's called Function Medical or whatnot, Function Health, something like that. Go check that out to learn the healthy ranges from a functional medicine perspective. That'd be my personal advice when you're interpreting and learning. You know, because the conventional medicine system, again, is still very outdated. They're still needing to catch up. Some things are, you know, always true in the conventional medicine space, plus with the functional or integrative medicine space. But I would say that largely, I do not find a lot of the conventional medicine ranges to be helpful. They're too wide. And all they mean is that we've seen somebody healthy at the bottom of this range, and we've seen somebody who said they're healthy at the top of this range. And so if you fall anywhere in between that, you're probably healthy. But if you yourself do not feel good, trust your body. And that's why I say order your own tests if you can, if your doctor is not going to. And yes, I know it costs out of your pocket, but sometimes you have to realize that investing in your health is something that you have to do with your own money that you earned. It's not something that's owed to you, unfortunately. So I do think it's important that, you know, see what your doctors will run with insurance, especially if you pay for insurance on your own, because I totally know the mind game of how frustrating it is. But if you are somebody who can also then go and get more labs that are more in depth, which I can actually do a really good episode on that if you guys would love to hear what I recommend as a better quality quote-unquote blood work physical, I can do a discussion about that. But again, it is not necessarily medical advice, because we have to say that, because it is very important that you know that you discuss these things with your practitioner, of course. Okay. So, all right, guys, I hope that today's conversation was helpful for you and that you better understand it. Again, we have a free download that is a big chart of all the macronutrient foods that land into each category. And I've separated, you know, the produce from the starchy carbs so that you can get a better idea of what foods land in which category for you. So that should be a really easy resource for you. And it's free to download. You can go to the show notes, whichever. It's everywhere. It's on all my things. So go check it out. All right. So let's go ahead and close out today's episode. Share this with anybody you think needs to learn some of these myths, that they are not true, or that there's context to them, right? There's a gray area. There's gray all the time. And so, as always, celebrate your strength and nourishment, walk with confidence, and I'll catch you in 2 weeks on another episode of Rebel Wellness. What did you think about that episode? If you enjoyed it, I hope that you would come join my community on Instagram at Rebel Wellness Podcast, or my coaching page at Kaylee Loren, or both. I would love to see your name pop up on my new follows list. I might say hello if I catch you. And I would also like to invite you to come check out my website, coachkales.com, if you're interested in seeing any more of the educational learning resources I have created for you. I have a whole ton of amazing free downloads that you can like dip your toe in the water of what working with me looks like. And if you are really vibing with what I have to say and how I teach it, come explore my courses that are available for purchase. They are all do it yourself. In the near future, I plan to have some awesome group coaching that will be all live. So stay tuned for that. And the best way to know when I'm going to launch those is through my monthly wellness newsletter, which is my hand curated, not AI generated, monthly all things health and wellness newsletter that I created to be your new favorite resource for for staying up to date with the latest in the health world, self-care resources that I've created, and a bunch of the clean beauty picks that I personally use myself and a whole lot more, as well as early access and discounts to anything that I create in the future for specifically my newsletter sign up. So if you'd like to sign up, head to coachkales.com and add yourself to my mailing list. Last but not least, I would absolutely love it if you would help our podcast grow by simply sharing a rating or review wherever you stream and are listening to me right now, and share it on your social medias or text it to some friends or family members if this episode resonated and was something that you think could help somebody else, because I really would love to help anybody in your circle if I've been helping you. So I absolutely am so grateful that you're here. And if you listened all the way through, you are a real one. So all right, Rebel, until next episode.